On this episode of the Dudes and Dads podcast, we talk with Father Chuck. Joel.
Father Chuck, I love it.
That made him sound Catholic. But
small c Catholic.
not like
in the creeds, you know, I believe in one holy apostolic Catholic church,
right?
Small c.
So we're talking really like Father Chuck as in my Father Chuck.
Father.
He's literally my father.
Yeah.
My father.
Yeah. It's good to have
a father.
It's good to have a father. 100%. And it's good to have, as the Dudes and Dads podcast, it's good to have actual, like, our... I have not had my
We've
dad
not.
On yet.
No.
Okay.
And he's a returning guest. My dad's a returning guest.
An alumni. A Dudes and Dads alumni. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Dudes and Dads podcast. Glad to have each and every one of you along for the ride. This is going to be a near and dear to our heart conversation because at least... I mean, Andy, while I've known your dad for a decent amount of time, turns out you have known him for your whole life.
I have. All 46 years of it.
Yeah. Which is, I just don't mind going on record as saying that is a while.
It is.
Nearly half a century.
Thanks. You're making me feel old.
If I can put a time frame on it, nearly half a century.
Yeah. And last time we had him on, I don't remember the exact episode, but we were talking about rest.
Yes.
And just how to rest well and how to retreat
Sabbathing,
Sabbath rest. Yeah.
All those good things, which that conversation has come up again in my life here recently. And we actually had a little bit today's sermon with brother Amos talking about creating places of silence to hear from the Lord. And I thought to myself, boy, I could really use some silence right about.
So
now.
We should just be quiet.
Well, I mean, I just need to go hang out with your dad is what I need to do. That's the answer. Hey guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Excited about the conversation tonight. Andy, I do want to say, I hit we've hit a recent special milestone in our family. We've put it out on the internets. Our eldest boy, Mr. Aaron James, is a fully licensed driver now.
Congratulations.
And we're so proud of him. We are, also in the, like, Aaron gets his license and then Josiah just turned 15. So that means that we are now on the clock of when he will begin his driver's ed experience. We're like a 1-2 punch with these two. So we're getting ready for that. Josiah was out driving his go-kart today. I think he's doing early prep work. But I will be honest with you. If he drives our minivan the way he drives the go-kart, we're going to have some problems.
I'm getting noticed that our audio is echoey and scratchy.
Echoey and scratchy?
I'm not really sure why.
It sounds lovely to me.
Yes. I'm not sure why.
Is it the internet?
It might be. Well, anyways.
Okay.
Not a whole lot we can do about it right now.
Yes.
You might have to check this out later.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Sorry. Sorry for any of these scratchiness. I apologize for any of our listeners.
It's the beard. It's the beard.
If we had less beards, it'd be less scratchy. But yeah, so a licensed driver, which is great, which it was particularly great as I was driving here tonight in our minivan. But the Suburban at home, I know, is very, very low on fuel. And I've got to be up early tomorrow morning to drop people off. And so what did I do? Like a true professional, leveraging my resources, I called Aaron and I said, son, I need you to take that truck and go put fuel in it for me so that it's ready to go tomorrow morning. And you know what he said to me? No problem, Dad. I'm on it.
That's because he's a new driver.
Exactly.
Later he won't.
I know. Exactly. Later on, that's what I'm counting on. Later on, it's going to be like, oh, gosh. But right now, especially because I'm currently paying his car insurance.
Right. You can do that.
I can. I'm just going to leverage that. Like, hey, this is part of your role as a new driver. But it's very exciting. And yet another opportunity, as we all know, for me to worry about my child while he's out on the
on the road.
We're releasing him to the care of the Lord as he's out there tooling around. So what's new with you, Andy? Anything going on? It's March, which means it's the worst month of the year, as I say every year. I'm doubling down yet again. March is it's psychological warfare on those of us that live here in Northern Indiana. We just missed, of all things, this past week, tornadoes.
Like
some really terrible tornadoes, which our hearts go out to our friends in the Michigan counties just north of us. Some significant damage, F2 and F3 tornadoes that ripped through. And I've just seen some of the videos. Really, really rough stuff. So it's March is, it's been bad weather. And then it'll be, I was down in southern Indiana, so it was 78 degrees and sunny, which then I drive back up here, and it is not that up here. It was okay today.
Yes.
March is all over the place. It's all over the place. And let's just be very clear. It will snow yet again this month.
Of course.
Mark my words. It will happen. So you've heard it here, people. You know my feelings on the month of March, and we're going to get through. And April's going to come. Easter will come. Resurrection. Sunshine, he is risen, and then we'll be off into spring, and then who knows what happens after that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
You have been here before, like we said. Tonight we're going to be talking a little bit about just seasons of change. You and Mom recently changed physical locations, as well as ministry locations. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'll craft my reply very carefully.
Oh,
thank you for the invitation.
Yes.
A lot of people, when they're on a show like this, they'll say, well, thank you for having me, which leaves you in a really weird position. So do you say, thanks for being had?
Thanks for being had.
Yeah. Thanks for the invitation.
Yep.
So, you know, I think it's helpful for, because I don't know, Andy, do you know how long ago was your, I never keep track of how long ago guests have come on, because it's like, oh, it doesn't seem all that long ago. And then we find out it's like 3, 4, 5 years
right.
ago.
Right. Season two, I think.
I think season two. Hold on. We'll find out here. So
if that's the case, it's been like 5 years since
season two, episode 15.
Oh,
so August 18th, 2020.
Oh, good golly.
So it's been a while.
Yeah. So it has been a while. So a lot of things have transpired in that time. But I think it's helpful to tell us, you know, you guys have been you and Becca have been a ministry team for just a number of years, really serving in the retreat, kind of Christian retreat ministry, mm-hmm. rest ministry space. I guess help our listeners remind us where you were previously geographically and what you were doing down south of us, and then kind of bring us up to the recent transition and the recent changes that have happened.
All right. Yeah, we were in Martinsville, Indiana for 15 years and several other locations prior to that. So we've been in ministry since 2003. Mm. There we were in an 11,000 square foot facility on 43 acres. We had guests in the facility near 320 days of the year, groups and individuals. And 15 years ago, that was pretty doable.
Yeah, yeah.
and we just thought, we'll just keep doing it until we're done. And our bodies, about the time that I was here on this last time, our bodies were starting to say, no, this is not going to happen anymore. And since then, they keep speaking louder.
Yeah.
And so it was about that time that we really felt 2000, 2001, we felt a nudge that, you know, maybe we need to consider moving on and try to pray through what that looks like. And God really gave us a release that, yeah, we didn't have to be, we weren't in that ministry to be killed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 320 days a year sounds like a lot to me for the kind of ministry you're doing. Oftentimes pretty intentional and intensive, mm-hmm. Interactions with folks. What within Rest Ministries, you know, in the work that you guys have been doing, I mean, when you look at like what your mission is, what the ultimate outcomes and desire of your guys' heart in your ministry, how would you define that historically?
I think it's always been to educate people on being proactive. We didn't want a reactive retreat ministry where we just wait for people to crash and burn and then brush them off, shove them back out the door. We wanted to help prevent a lot of that damage that comes in the wake of a burnout, especially from a leader in a church. So we try to teach that God had rhythm of Sabbath. Mm-hmm. You know, it was every 7 days they were supposed to rest. They weren't supposed to go out and gather food. And every they had yearly Sabbaths. They had annual Sabbaths that were 50 years apart. And so it's like we need to teach people, especially in this culture, what it means to have a rhythm of Sabbath. And then you're working out of that relationship with God and out of that strength that comes from Him and His strength and His abilities, instead of pushing through and doing it on your own, which is pretty puny because you end up spending a lot of time trying to convince God to bless what you've done or fix what you've messed up that time.
Mm-hmm. Why? I mean, the sheer, in part, the reason for your ministry existing and why it had people in, especially down in Martinsville, 320 days out of the year, no shortage of need for this ministry, not clearly. Yeah, no shortage.
Yeah.
Why? Why the consistent need? Because obviously something is going on culturally for us, which you've kind of outlined, but there seems to be within our society, kind of Western society, and let's just be honest, Western ministry society, some trends and things that kind of consistently happen that cause a demand for what you guys were putting into practice.
Yeah.
How would you kind of typify that and talk about that?
Culturally, we, and I'll speak a lot for men. It's not so much typically for women, but we're judged by what we produce.
Mm.
That's our value. That's who we are. That's where we find our identity. And especially in ministry circles, it's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're deeply passionate about what we are called to do. We don't want to let God down. So we're gonna give 150% all the time. And pretty soon our switch is always on, and we're never allowing ourselves to rest because we feel like there's just so much more to do out there.
Never a shortage of work, right, Andy?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So then, yeah, you guys were doing that. Obviously, I think you've put a good patterns in your own life to continue to rest and recharge. I think you'd have to, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about how that works for you?
Sure. When you live where you work,
yeah.
I mean, if you're not intentional, it's not going to happen. And you know, it's different than going to ministry where you're always on for 8 or 10 hours or however long you're there. We're there 24 hours a day. We've got people coming and going. And so one of the things that we structured is that we spend an hour a day with God. And we get into His Word, spend it praying, you know, digging into the Bible. Spend 3 to 4 days, 3 to 5 days a quarter getting away. So we're not trying to rest at our location. We're trying to get to different places where we can have a break and not be always looking for things that need done. And then take a week per year to get away and just hang out with God. And that's it. Our board holds us to that, holds us accountable to that. And boy, if we ever miss that, it's all over our faces. It's evident. And it starts filtering how we relate to people and our patience and all of that.
You know, I've recent, and I'm trying to remember where I was in this recent conversation. My friends who we hope to have on this podcast too, Dan and Tanya White. So they run the Kino Center down in Puerto Rico. So this is kind of a ministry burnout recovery center that they have, and they've been running for a number of years, and I'm just really intrigued by their work. You know, but they recently, I was sitting in on a seminar of theirs, and they recently said, you know, you mentioned the word burnout and trying to have these preemptive upstream practices so that we don't find ourselves in this place. The big thing that, because now they're going, like, burnout is now becoming an actual physical, like, diagnose, like it's a diagnosis, right? So that because there are physiological, symptoms attached to it now. not just a sense of like being tired or being or whatever, although that is definitely kind of this, that's part of it. You know, Dan mentioned the way he realized he was a burnout is that he started having, he had these tremors and they weren't going away. And it was like, they, you know, when all the story was basically went to all these doctors and they were kind of like trying to like decide like what in the world was going on. And then finally one of the physicians asked what he did for, like, actually asked what he did for a living. And he's like, well, I'm a pastor. And they're like, oh, and like, you know, that was, it was kind of the beginning to figure out. But out of that conversation came really, if I'm remembering this correctly, I think I am, that just taking a vacation was not going to prevent prevent burnout.
Right.
That there were deeply relational pieces that had to be in place in their life in terms of how they were interacting with community, with God, all of those things, that you could get as many vacations. It was still possible essentially to be taking like two or three vacations a year from your ministry role and still be like absolutely just headlong into a burnout trajectory. And that there were and that it was not so much structural problems, but relational problems that led in that direction. How does that connect with you and what you've seen and experienced and how you guys have engaged in ministry on the relational side of things?
Yeah, I've heard it said that in America, we worship our work, we play at our worship, and we work at our play.
Okay.
And so to point to what you're saying, vacations are usually vacations because we're on doing stuff all the time. And it is that relational stuff. And I think what really plays into that factor is what I've seen in a lot of people when they're going into a burnout stage is I describe it as they're flatlined.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their peaks. They lose their valleys on an emotional, on a decision-making basis, on a relational-making basis, on a spiritual-making basis. You lose the peaks and the valleys, and you get to the place where you can't make decisions. You can't, yeah, you don't even want to think about what's going on.
Yep.
And you're just trying to tread water. Yep. And I think that's the biggest thing we face is how long can you tread water?
Yeah.
You know, the world's record is 86 hours, but eventually if you're still over your head,
right,
you're going to die.
Yeah.
It's going to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned, I think the thing I'm really intrigued with, and it makes sense, I guess, but maybe it sneaks by us, that chronic indecisiveness may be a real, an indicator of where you are at.
Yeah.
And I've thought back through my life of places and times where it's like, why is decision making suddenly very difficult for me? It feels like this gargantuan lift, even if it's simple decisions, it doesn't have to necessarily be like these, are we going to move to a different state? Not necessarily that, like, oh, are we getting pizza or are we getting, you know, are we getting burgers? Mm-hmm. You know, like things like that, where you start, you have those kind of senses. And I think those are things easy to brush off. Mm-hmm. And yet,
they don't go away.
Right.
And so we've got to listen. We got to be aware and listen for these things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes though, we don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm in that place and I come to retreat, really not knowing what to expect, not really knowing myself, not really being in touch with my body, my relationships, all of that. And I sit down with you and Becca, what are the questions that you're asking? What are the things that you're hoping to introduce into that conversation?
One of the first things we do before people even come, when they sign up for a retreat, we ask them how we can pray for them. Mm-hmm. That indicates a whole lot right there. Mm-hmm. The stuff that floats to the top, is usually the pollutants that are in their life. Mm-hmm. And, so we walk through that with people and we ask them their retreating habits and, how much time do you spend with God and how do you let that direct your life? And, those are very indicative questions of, you know, oh, I guess I really don't. I make decisions by what's best for me financially or most comfortable for me, and not whether this succeeds or fails by human standards. Is it going to draw me closer to God?
Yeah. So I just can imagine that there's a lot of, I have to imagine that sometimes when people are coming, depending on their state of mind, state of heart, those initial conversations can be pretty upending to them. Like you're almost like you're speaking a different language. How does a person who is just very sideways in where they are, how do they turn that corner? Because like I've been in situations before where it's like, okay, I have a retreat time. I only have so much time to do this. And in the back of my mind, if I'm really honest, it's like, I need to make the most. I gotta, oh my gosh, I've got to retreat so hard right now because I've only got 3 days, and then it's back to, you know, it's back to whatever. And already it feels, and then you start becoming, you get anxiety about the retreat, you can get anxiety about the retreat process. So I'm curious as to like, how does a person get kind of like distance themselves from that, where they are really just kind of released to the goodness of the experience and the intention of the experience?
There's a couple different things. We speak to the people a lot of times about pre-entry and re-entry, which is where spiritual warfare really comes. A lot of times on the way to the retreat, there's all kinds of distractions. There's stuff that needs to get done that can't get done. Traffic's bad. And then when they leave the retreat, they're on this high and they have to stop at Walmart, and they're waiting, you know, 2 hours in line to get out of Walmart. And so all of a sudden now they're focusing on, their focus is off of what God did. So we try and educate people to the fact that that's spiritual warfare. That's going to happen. But we also, we're not trained counselors. We know how to pray. We know how to listen to the Holy Spirit. But we do partner. God told us a long time ago, you don't have to be everything to everybody. Sure. You don't have to be a marriage ministry. There's people out there that do that. You don't have to be a spiritual director. You don't have to be a trained counselor. That we're just a conduit. And so if people need that, we have that available to hook them up with people that we do trust.
That's nice. That's good.
So you've mentioned that you guys were doing this at the big house, we'll call it the big house, and you were feeling tired. You also felt God calling you to move. You were, I'm sure, wrapping that in prayer, because you were just saying you take a lot of, you know, everything to prayer, everything to God. What did that process look like for you? You know, as far as transitioning, because again, this is your baby. I mean, I've seen it. Well, I'm your baby, but no, I'm not. Emily, my sister, is. Yeah. But I've seen it from its infancy stage to where you were trying to find a place, to where it's grown to this, what it was, and now you're trying to, you feel the need to downsize. But to continue, talk me through that, what that looks like. What were your first initial, like, what, once you felt called to do that, not just by your own body, but by God, like what did that look like?
To be honest, there was a struggle at first, and not that I'm not always honest, but there was a struggle at first because I thought, oh, we're going to lessen the size of our impact, the footprint of our impact, because, you know, going from seven guest rooms, 320 days a year to now going to two guest rooms and not doing group retreats, just doing couples and individuals, it was like, we're not going to have as much impact. But what God walked us through is the impact can really be greater, because the exponential impact is still what drives us. People coming there, getting change, and then they go change other people. For instance, the lady that taught the Sunday school class today, she was convinced to start that ministry. Because of what, so that exponential impact is cool. But the other thing that God laid on my heart is, he has been I don't want to say nagging me, but he's been pretty persistent for me to write some books. Mm. And he's laid them on my heart. I've got some outlines, but I haven't had the time to do it. And so in writing those books, I'm going to have a maybe nationwide or worldwide impact on teaching people about Sabbath rest and the importance of Reubens. 3 to 4 or 5 different couples and individuals every year would come to us and say, we want to do retreat ministry. Maybe a little different looking, but how do we start? And so we would try and walk people through that. So I think this is going to free us up time, a lot of time for us to still do retreats, still impact people, still pour into people's lives directly, still be the conduit, but then help consult with people and really take them deeper on how do you start this? It doesn't have to look just like what we do, but how do you get past the government and all the, and the 501c3 and all that stuff? And how do you select locations, and so we've already had people asking us that since we've been up in this location, and, you know, so writing the books and then time for teaching and just time for also pouring into our grandkids and kids.
So. So you move up here, you have a new location. How in the world did that happen?
Well, we ask us that ourselves that a lot. So it was back 2001 or so. Houses are still selling like that. And we feel like God's releasing us to move. And so we felt like Elkhart County was a place to move because some family here at that time, both our moms and dads were still here, and they were aging, and it's, you know, come up here and help them start this ministry back home where we were raised. And so we started talking with a ministry in Colorado that seemed like it had a like heart. And we danced with them about 9 months, went out, met with their board. And, you know, and so during this time, we'd get a realtor, tell her what we're looking for, you know, walkout basement this size out in the country, you know, 2 suites we can make. And so things are moving ahead. Becca's up here helping her mom and dad while her dad's health is failing. And this realtor has our checklist. So she sent us emails every day. So we get this email. Becca's up here. I'm down south. And Becca calls me, said, did you see that email? I said, yeah. She said, what do you think? I said, it looks like the place. And then I told Becca, I said, so go look at it. Cause if you don't make an appointment to look at it, it's going to be sold, you know? And she said, then what? And I said, well, make an offer on it. She thought I was crazy. But God had orchestrated some things so that, we put an offer in, it was accepted. And then the next day we're talking to the people in Colorado and we're like, you know, how'd that board meeting go? They said, we're ready to move ahead. And Brick said, well, that's cool, because we just bought a house. And and they said, oh, no, we're ready to go ahead and explore the next steps.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, that fell through. We danced with several other ministries that wanted it. But ministries aren't usually flush with money. And so in that prayer process, God released us that even if it wasn't a ministry that God could still use that place to touch somebody's heart that may not even be a Christian. So it was a four year wait.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, especially I think when you know that you heard from God and yet the waiting.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times and the amount of people we had people that their knees were wore out.
Yeah.
And we were wore out. And we kept saying, God, can't you see we're getting older? And you called us to this. And we actually then put it on the market with three different realtors over time.
Mm.
And, you know, it was about the time that we made that decision to buy the place up here that the market kind of tanked. And especially, you know, for that kind of property, it was very unique.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think for any of us imagining, you're essentially selling an estate. Mm-hmm. That is what it is. This is a thousands of square feet, multiple rooms, multiple acres.
It's not just anybody that it's going to be buying this house.
That is a niche market as it were. Right?
They couldn't find comps. They had to go out of state.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So, you know, up against those kind of challenges, it seems like really only God will, you know, it will take an act of God to overcome that. What finally ended up happening? How did the sale, because obviously something moved eventually.
Yeah. And one of the signs we found when we were in a thrift store said, be patient. God's timing might be sooner than you think. Mm. So we bought that, we put it in a prominent place, and we said, you know, God, you got to make this happen. So we had a retreat. It was a group retreat. It was a group of Christian entrepreneurs that had great ideas, but didn't necessarily have the resources to make it happen. And this ministry was to help people make it happen. So there was, you know, about 20 people at the house, and we're feeding them, we're taking care of them. And the conversation came up that we were trying to sell the house. At that time, it was off the market. We had taken it off. We'd made the decision to take it off the market for 6 months so it would show up as a new listing. And there was a guy that was speaking at that retreat. He was one of the people doing the input. And he came up to us and he said, and we found out, he says, I'm a realtor. I might have some people might be interested. And he said, the crazy thing is, I wasn't supposed to be at this retreat. I didn't have time for it. Mm-hmm. But he said, God gave me the word for the year, interruptible. And he said, I felt like I needed to, you know, be interruptible. And so Lee was his name. You know, we took that and we prayed about it for a while. And after about another 3 months, we contacted Lee, said, hey, we think we're ready to list it. What do you think? And he just about didn't take it because he lived 45 miles north and he wanted to do it well. So we start walking through it. And the very first thing we do is pray. And he's praying about it. And he's praying over us. He's praying for who to bring. And so we decide to sign the contract. And that was early September. Within 7 days, we had two different showings, and one buyer came back, made a counter offer. We countered and they accepted it. And within 30 days, it was closed and we were moved. And
amen.
They took all the furnishings and, you know, anything.
Yeah.
So it was like, yeah,
right.
Coming might be sooner than you think, but
because you had to significantly downsize from that. So that's a blessing that they were willing to take and buy all of that with that and things.
Well, and we had the place up here fully furnished by then.
Right.
So,
yeah. Right. Because you had that over
4 years.
4 years. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the, for you, what did that look like when you were struggling with, I'm going to use that word, correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. God's timing on that. Mm-hmm. What kind of things went through your head, and how did you learn to be able to trust God with those?
I think one of the big things that hit us about year three, going into four, was that we felt like we didn't want to miss what God was doing in the waiting. And I think so often we're so in a hurry to get to the end line and get to the prize that we miss. Mm-hmm. We miss what God's doing. And so we started reading some books and doing some studies on waiting and looking at examples in the Bible when people were waiting. You know, God's chosen people waited 40 years to get into the promised land. And then there's a flood, you know, a flood ravaged river right in front of them. And so, you know, they had their share of obstacles, but God delivered them in a way that only he could do. And I think that's one of the biggest things we take away from this is there's no way we could have orchestrated this on our own. If we would have, it would have failed miserably. And so it was.
And at least you didn't have to wait 40 years.
Yeah,
I mean,
it felt like it at times.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. By comparison, goodness. Yeah. Have there been any surprises kind of in this new season of ministry, things that you've been struck by or new learnings that you've encountered in this this different location, or how things have changed? I'm wondering what new experiences maybe you've encountered?
It used to be we'd wake up in the morning, we'd think, what group's here? What meals do we have to make? You know, how many beds do we have to get prepared? How much cleaning do we have to do? And now it's a lot more relaxed. And, mm-hmm. and so there is more time for the relational stuff. When groups were there, many times we didn't get to interact with the guests themselves that were part of the group. Most of our interactions were, you know, I'd go down for a slice of pizza at 10 o'clock at night and run to somebody in the kitchen and we'd pray for 2 hours, yeah. you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, that's just all, we're still working through that. And people ask, how can we pray for you? I said, well, for balance, because it'd be real easy to just go into veg mode and, you know, forget about reading the books and writing the books and stuff. And so that's one thing. But I think one of the other things reflectively was how God allowed us to remain there and how he provided. Our mortgage was $8,500 a month. Mm-hmm. It was a choker.
Yeah.
But over the years, God provided for that through retreats and always made the payments. But as we were trying to sell it, we were downsizing the amount of retreats so that we could have the house available to show, you know, because we couldn't already show it if we had guests there. And so he allowed us to sell one of the houses that was on the property, a little house that gave us a year's worth of mortgage. He allowed us to do a selective cut harvest of 540 trees. And that gave us more than a year's worth of mortgage. And we were down to 2 months payment in the bank. And then God brought Lee and sold the house in 30 days. And so it's like, yeah, I just had to be reminded over and over of God's provisions. And that's, he's still doing it now.
It's interesting. I know from times in my past, and I'm sure Joel, you can speak the same thing, that a lot of times when we're in it, it's hard to necessarily trust God, even if we've seen him in the past, where the way he's worked. I mean, that helps definitely, but it's always great to take a look back after the whatever it is has come to an end and look at the ways that God has provided, but then also being able to see ways that you may not have ever known that God was providing until you can look back and see that from a bigger picture. Yeah. Like, oh, God is providing in multiple ways.
Yeah. And we've always said you can't move forward unless you're looking back. And I think that's true in every aspect of life. And that's why it's so important to retreat, is because it's time you can look back and reflect on what God has done, how he's provided, how he's taken care of you. And then that bolsters our faith to say God can do, he can sell that house. He can provide, he can pay that mortgage, whatever.
Repeated, and specifically in the Old Testament, but within the whole of the Bible, the repeated command and invitation to remember it's significant. Remember what God has done. Why? Because it will inform how you go forward. Mm-hmm. Either in fear or kind of a bold hope of like, like all of, because obviously for any of us in your situation, God is not unaware at any given time, right? And I'm just, you know, in my own flesh and in short sightedness, it's interesting that I think in the worst place you can be is to believe that God is unaware, like that I have to like do something extra special to get his attention, to like remind him. It's like, listen, I know you got a very full calendar, God. If I could just get back on your priority list here. And it's like, no, that's me thinking in a very, like in my own very limited capacities about how, you know, kind of projecting onto God and how he's operating. And, you know, and it, I mean, Chuck, but at this, at your guys' stage of life, like that, these lessons are still being learned. Mm-hmm. that I'll just selfishly for myself, being a bit your junior, I just, it's like, oh, I've got more decades of this ahead of me as, as well. Like God is not finished in this work of, putting forth challenges and growing us if we'll be open to it. So given the, given where you're at now, like has the discussion around retirement ever occurred? Has this crossed your mind? Have you used the R word out loud? How have you thought about the future?
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot. We don't want to retire, but we do want to finish well. Mm-hmm. And it's a delicate balance there. And we want to do it in obedience. There was a book that I read one time. It was called Stark Raving Obedience. And it's about just, it looks like you're a lunatic, but you need to be obedient. And so, yeah, while a lot of our friends have retired and they're living that life, we want to have that balance. We want to finish well. We want to, you know, we're trying to structure it. So this place is a place that we could retire. We could live out our days, you know, trying to make it handicap accessible, all those things. But we're also looking at how we can employ other people to make that happen. Because most of these retreats that are coming here are pretty self-contained. And we've got a girl that rides her bike down and does cleaning. And so, yeah, it can be pretty self-contained.
Yeah.
And so we're thinking, well, as we get older and it gets more difficult, we'll hire neighbor kids to clean the sidewalks and the driveway. And we're already talking about having a couple of Andy's kids come so that we can get away.
Yeah, those grandkids are in prime.
Right. Employment.
Prime employment employment season.
In sit for so that we can get away and enjoy some of our time to travel and do things and still get the ministry done there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm grateful for the work that you guys do. I wish more people would open themselves to it. When you would kind of describe maybe the, and if there's not a typical, that's great too, but the typical retreater at your guys' location, what are the backgrounds that these folks are coming from? What are the scenarios that they find themselves in?
A lot of, probably about 40% are lay people that just need to get away. We've got that other 60% are divided amongst missionaries, church staff, sending people that are part of a sending organization, counselors that understand the stress and the need. So yeah, about 60% are people in ministry of some sort, or feel like they're being called into ministry and are coming there to flesh it out. And, you know, we've seen that happen so often.
Yeah. So I guess kind of explain a little bit. So the retreat center house looks a lot different than it did up in down in Martinsville. It's obviously a lot smaller and you're doing personal retreats only as opposed to doing personal and group retreats. So what could a typical person expect to experience when they come to you, especially if they've never retreated at all?
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? Are they just going to be hanging out with you guys or like, what does that look like?
No, we have our living quarters upstairs and some of our, we can house overflow guests up there if we need to, but, we've dedicated the whole lower level. We've put two individual suites down there. Each of them, it's a walkout basement, walkout lower level, that opens up the backyard, got a waterfall pond there. It's on the end of a cul-de-sac, 3/4 acre, pine trees on each side that give it a lot of seclusion, a farm field in the back. And then each people have their own suite so they can come and go as they want. They're set up with a small kitchenette so they can make their own food, or if they want to go to some of our Amish friends, have an Amish meal, they can do that. Learn more about a reduced lifestyle. We try and, again, get those prayer requests ahead of time and then meet with those guests when they come or during the time that they're there and pray with them and just, you know, say, how can we pray with you? What are you struggling with? And then, you know, if they do need something further, we try and hook them up before they get there with a spiritual leader, spiritual director or counselor. But yeah, it's as little or as much contact as they want, but mm-hmm. it's really cool. A lot of these people come in our repeat retreat mm-hmm. guests. And so we get to catch up and they get to hear what God's done in their lives and just mm-hmm. see the amazing things that God's done because of people hitting life's pause button and breaking out of what's culture's expecting from mm-hmm. them and getting out of the busyness and noise.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of obviously things to do around the area too. You know, when you first think, oh, you're in a cul-de-sac, you're like, well, this is maybe not super restful, but I can say from experience, for one, the property is it is secluded, even though you're in a cul-de-sac because mm-hmm. you're at the end, but it does have
only 10 houses.
Right. Well, it's a small neighborhood. And you've built it
pumpkin vine.
Yeah. But right you also have it. The pumpkin vine so that people could go walk and experience nature and be away if they wanted to also. Mm-hmm.
So. And they got, swings and benches, as I mentioned, that the waterfall pond that got that sound of running water, which is so soothing. And so we had a guy there just this week. He said, my wife was at the other place. She's been here. And this is my first retreat at either location. He said, you've done it perfectly. Mm-hmm. It's not overdone. It's not overly busy. It's just, you walk in, you feel the presence of God. Mm. And they're set up with, some comfortable seating, and each unit has a little electric fireplace in it for ambiance, and you got everything you need. You're self-contained. So it's pretty fun to see what God does.
All right. We do have a comment from somebody that has the username at Chuck Lehman.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say either do one of two things. Someone has hacked your dad's account or
it's my mom.
Or it's your mom.
Chuck, rumor has it that this year is you and Rebecca's 50th anniversary. How are you planning to celebrate the big milestone with your sweet wife?
Becca, see this. What a wise woman to take this opportunity
to put him on the spot.
And we have witnesses now. Yeah. There seems to be some sort of strategy here.
Yeah. The kids have our kids and grandkids are planning a getaway up in Michigan for us.
Beautiful.
We're tacking on either days on the front or days in the back so that we can have additional time. Mm-hmm. And then we have a cruise coming up this fall.
That's awesome. Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited for you 14, guys.
A 12-day Caribbean cruise. So.
50 years of marriage. Worth celebrating.
I don't have
right
a
there.
Clap.
But yeah, but that is definitely a clap for sure. Wow. Great.
And so we've worked together more than we've done separate things. She was a stay-at-home mom during the kids' early years. But
there we go.
Oh, there we go. Got it.
But the rest of the time, we've worked together. And people say, how can you work together with your wife? And I'm like, how can you not? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine doing ministry without her right there beside me.
Yeah. You guys are a force to be reckoned with in the retreat space for sure. And we're grateful for it. Chuck, okay. I've heard these words. I'm a listener out there somewhere on the interwebs, and I'm like, this sounds like something I need to look into. Where can people find you? Mm-hmm. How can they connect?
It's rest-ministries.org. That'll get you the website. We have a ministry number that's listed there, so you can call that, and it'll get directly through either my phone or Rebecca's phone. We're still updating the web to reflect the new location. But it has everything you need there to contact, and just contact Becca and tell her when you're looking and she'll give you availability.
And you guys are in the Northern Indiana space. So you're like 15 minutes from the Michigan border.
Yeah.
It's kind of located
between Goshen and Middlebury in Elkhart County. Yeah.
Nice. Well, for those that are listening, and if you're wondering, should I retreat? The answer is yes.
Yes,
you should. It can do, whether that's for an individual or for couples, it can serve as a needed and strategic voice of health and wellness and hope.
Well, and I'll just give you a personal example too. Julie and I recently took some time away and did a retreat of our own.
Nice.
Not at their place, but we did somewhere
not
else.
Not that he's upset about it.
but we were able to, it was great because we were able to spend some time together. As so we could strengthen our relationship as a couple, but then also we took a lot of time just in quiet and in silence during that time to reflect and pray and see where God was leading us this
year.
And
then when you come back together, in the times of meals or whatever, you find out that, well, God was leading you to this and he was leading me to that very same thing. And we were reading different scriptures, but you know, and it is, I can say without a doubt, it's life changing. It is life altering. It's part of how we got into ministry through fasting and prayer and retreat. It's like we walked away from good paying job in the Chicago suburbs with all our security, because God spoke to us in times of listening to him.
I don't hear a sense of any regret for making that decision, which is beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. 23 years now.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. But before we let you go, we have to do what we always do with our guests.
We do.
And now it's time for the Dudes and Dads Pop Quiz.
Thanks, Reagan.
Fantastic, Reagan. Is that an updated? I feel like that's, is that more updated?
I don't know.
We should, you know what we should do is.
It's newer than this one. What's been? That's when Hattie was like three. That's now she's 10. That's amazing.
We got to get now that all of our boys, their voices are all a couple octaves deeper than back in the day. We'll have to get them. We got to get them all back on here to do our sound bites. But yes, pop quiz.
So if you've never joined us, pop quiz is when we just ask our guests random things that have nothing to do with the topic. So things that get you to know you better.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Joel, go for it.
Okay.
I'm really disappointed that Mark isn't here tonight. Mark, shout out if you're listening.
Yeah, Mark, we love you and we hope to see you back soon. Mark is recovering from a very significant surgery. That's not true at all. He's not recovering from anything. At least I hope not. But he's not here with us tonight.
He always has the really, really strange questions.
It's the strange. And I don't know. I cannot compete with Mark's strangeness, but we'll start off with, we'll just do a little softball toss. Chuck, I'm ordering a pizza for you. What am I putting on it?
Everything.
This is true. So quick story. So a lot of times when we get together, we do big or different meals and stuff. Mm-hmm. One of them we do is like a make your own pizza.
Oh, okay.
Every individual, all the kids, grandkids.
Okay. And I have inherited this from him. Oh. It'll be like whatever. And our pizza is like, 6 inches.
Takes three times longer to cook.
Yeah. we're waiting 3 hours for our pizza when everyone's done eating because it's just
cleaned
so
up
thick.
And everything. Yeah.
Gotcha. But yeah, so it is everything.
Okay. It's the layman supreme is what it is.
Right.
That's
right.
What I hear.
I've inherited that from
okay.
him.
Okay. Got it. So. Okay.
All right. Wow. Okay. So if you were stuck on a desert island, what is one thing besides your wife that you would want there? Because that's an easy one.
Mm-hmm. I think the Bible would be key because that would keep me focused. Probably a telegraph to call for
and
help
and a pizza oven.
Yeah,
that's good. So you're taking a cruise later this year, which is super exciting. What is one place that you hope to travel before you breathe your last breath, Chuck? Which we hope is years and years from now. But before that happens, what's one place you haven't traveled that you hope to travel?
We'd love to go to the Holy Lands.
Oh,
and,
yes.
You see these places that we've read so much about, and love to go back and visit Australia again. We were there for our 25th. But
nice.
25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Holy smoke. Yes. Okay.
All right. So you had mentioned that your work and your house is all essentially the same, right? Because you're living where you're doing ministry at. What is one thing that when you're not doing ministry that you do for fun?
A lot of times, Beck and I will go out to eat.
Okay.
Bike riding is huge. Looking to get back into that now that both knees are replaced.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Oh, that's nice.
So follow-up question for me. In Elkhart County, where should I take my wife on a date for dinner?
Mm-hmm. There's a new restaurant that we found that was excellent. It's Tequila Barrel, I think is the name of it. It's where Dandino's restaurant
used to be.
Okay.
So fabulous.
Okay. I saw the parking lot was absolutely jam packed the other night, which by the way, at that restaurant is not a normal thing. And so I'm like, cause they have a new, it's a newer business in there. And so, that's good.
They spent 3 months training their staff. We were there 3 days after they opened and it was seamless. It was flawless. And oh, it was amazing.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Okay. That's, man, what an endorsement.
Write that down. Yeah.
Let's write that down. That could be, maybe a potential, Sparky date night in the future.
All right.
What a great, group outing. Okay. I like the idea of that. Chuck, what's one thing that is in your home that we would be surprised to find?
That's a good question.
Yeah. A lot of people be surprised to see our tandem bike.
Okay.
It's, I think it should be a prerequisite for everybody that's thinking about getting married. You learn how to use that thing and you learn how to communicate and, yeah, we rode that 3,400 miles in 39 days across country 25 years ago. So
that bike has seen some, seen some time. I do have to say one of the more, and I don't even remember what, but I want to say that my wife and I did the tandem bicycle on Mackinac Island several years ago. And I want to say that it also resulted in some pretty significant arguing. So, to Chuck's point, it can be, can really, really uncover things in the relationship and build into it too, if you allow it.
Awesome. I'm at loss for questions today. Let's see, if you had one person that was just following you around at all times, what would you task them with doing? Like an assistant, what would you say, here, do this for me?
I don't like book work and the stuff, the business side of ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that would probably be what I'd hand off.
All right.
Get yourself a, what we like to call a fractional bookkeeping assistant. Nice.
All right, Joel, last question.
Okay, last question. I'm going to say, let's see here. I want to incorporate something with, because as a grandfather, you have like this is a unique.
I was going to ask which of his kids are his favorite, but that's really not fair.
Yeah,
that's a fantastic,
sorry, Emily.
That's a fantastic question. Yeah, Emily. That's so great. What do you enjoy? I mean, really the big thing, what do you enjoy about being grandpa? Mm-hmm. What's the most enjoyable thing in this season for you in that role?
I'd have to say without a doubt, it's watching how well they've been raised Andy and Julian, Steve and Emily, to see them living out the spiritual life. Cause you can't, I remember one time when Andy was really little, he said, how do you do it? How do you do what? He goes, how did you get us to believe in Jesus? And it's like, well, we can't do that.
Constant threats.
Yeah. But it's cool to see that and to see them take on the responsibilities of doing things in the church and volunteering places and all that entails is just pretty cool.
Beautiful.
You have successfully passed the Dudes and Dads podcast quiz, pop quiz. Thanks for being a guest.
Gosh.
And a return guest.
Another returner. And, this is going to be a great year for you. 2026 is going to be a great year for you guys. 50th wedding anniversary, travel ahead of you.
The word opportunities is our word for the year.
Opportunities.
Perfect.
Love it. And as always, we didn't say this, for those of you that are interested in supporting Rest Ministries, guarantee if you go to the website, there's plenty of direction on how you can do that too. But, for those of you that are just interested in investing in the ministry, that's an option as
right.
well.
And investing in yourself. Definitely. I would suggest learn. If you've never done a retreat, do it. It is well worth it. Take some time out of your day just to slow down, or your week, your year to slow down.
I would count it a win, Andy, if all of our ministry friends in this area had touched base at least one time with Rest Ministries. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a really, really amazing thing. So that's my challenge to all my pastor friends out there, all my ministry friends, all of that. That's my challenge to you if you're tuning in. Okay, awesome. Well, hey, Friends, it's been a blast. Thanks for hanging out. If you got you got any questions or harsh comments or concerns, dudesanddadspodcast@gmail.com is the place to send that.
Pull out your cell phone and dial our voicemail number, which can be found at 574-501-4467.
We love a good voicemail.
We do.
Let's see, dudesanddads.com, the website. Well, that's where we got all the past shows, show notes, merchandise.
You can support our show there, too.
You can support our show there, which we love good supporters. And Andy, I think you and I should talk about this. Maybe some updated merch options. Maybe we'll look into that. We should, I don't know, we spice it up a little bit. But until then, you can always check out what we've got.
You can.
And buy a shirt. Buy a t-shirt.
A hat.
The summer's coming. Buy a t-shirt.
Your wife would appreciate it if you had some new swag.
That's true. She would. I'm sure. That's what she'll say. Okay. Hey, friends. Thanks for hanging out with us. So glad to see you, and we hope to see you next time. Until then, we wish you grace.
And peace.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for being here.